From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
Without these memos, the entire exercise of torture probably would not have taken place.
He did not cooperate fully in terms of interrogations until after waterboarding.
These techniques, from an operational perspective, are slow, ineffective, unreliable.
These photos may only have a chilling effect on future investigations of detainee abuse.
Torture. President Obama does an about-face and says he won't release the torture photos. He also plans to revive the military tribunal system. And Congress now votes not to fund the closing of Guantanamo. Today we spend the hour with New Yorker journalist Jane Mayer, author of The Dark Side, the inside story of how the war on terror turned into a war on American ideals, and British barrister Philippe Sands, author of Torture Team, Rumsfeld's Memo and the Betrayal of American Values. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Senate Democrats are refusing to finance the closure of the U.S. military prison at Guantanamo until the Obama administration submits a detailed plan. On Tuesday, Democratic leaders said they would reject an $80 million request to relocate Guantanamo's 240 prisoners and vowed to block the transfer of any prisoners into the United States. The move follows a similar action by House Democrats last week. It would mean delaying President Obama's promise to close the Guantanamo prison by at least several months. The Senate has voted to impose new regulation on the credit card industry. The measure would give credit card companies a nine-month deadline to comply with new rules, including a 45-day notice and an explanation before raising customers' interest rates. They'd also be forced to post agreements on the internet and allow online bill payments without added fees. The measure is weaker than original versions that included an amendment to cap interest rates at 15%. Other defeated proposals would have protected consumers from spending money they don't have and limiting how companies impose new fees. Meanwhile, the New York Times reports banks are now considering a series of measures to recoup their anticipated lost profits from the new rules. The moves include imposing new annual fees and curbing cash back and rewards programs to Sterling borrowers. The House is expected to vote on the credit card bill as early as today. A final version could be held up by an amendment added to the Senate bill that would allow people to carry loaded guns in national parks. House leaders say they might vote separately on that proposal. The Obama administration is reportedly mulling proposals for a new regulatory commission overseeing financial products and services, including mortgages, credit cards, and mutual funds. The proposed commission would be tasked with ensuring loans and other financial products are structured and marketed fairly. President Obama's unveiled new national emissions and mileage requirements for cars and light trucks. The rules aim to cut emissions by 30% and require passenger cars to average 39 miles per gallon by 2016. On Tuesday, Obama noted the rules are the first to impose federal regulations on car emissions in the United States.
For the first time in history, we have set in motion a national policy aimed at both increasing gas mileage and decreasing greenhouse gas pollution for all new trucks and cars sold in the United States of America.
The White House estimates the regulations would reduce emissions of greenhouse gases by 900 million metric tons over the lifetime of more efficient vehicles. Appearing with Obama at the White House, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger praised the new rules.
We are very happy that this has happened because it means a reduction of one-third of greenhouse gases and one-third of oil consumption. As you have heard the president say, this is reducing oil consumption by 1.8 billion gallons of oil. So this is staggering. As I said, it's an equivalent of taking 55 million cars off the road.
A joint American-Russian commission has concluded the proposed U.S. missile defense system in Eastern Europe would be ineffective against the types of Iranian missiles it would purportedly aim to stop. The Bush administration launched the program under the pretense it would protect Europe against Iran, but it's widely seen as a far-strike weapon. The Commission of U.S.-Russia Scientists bolsters that perception. In their report for the East-West Institute, the scientists say Iran is highly unlikely to produce a nuclear-tipped missile, and the proposed defense shield wouldn't be able to stop one anyway. The scientists say Iran is years away from producing a nuclear warhead and could only do so with major and highly visible foreign assistance. It also notes Iran would be further unlikely to launch an attack because doing so would assure its own destruction through U.S. retaliation. The Obama administration so far continued with the missile program, but hinted it could be open to its cancellation. In Sri Lanka, the government continues to prevent aid workers from reaching some 300,000 people displaced in the fight with Tamil Tiger rebels. Earlier this week, the Sri Lankan government declared victory after a 26-year war. The Times of London reports Sri Lanka's blocking the UN from reaching government-run camps housing refugees. There are fears camp populations will be hit with an outbreak of contagious diseases, including hepatitis and dysentery. In the occupied territories, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has sworn in a new cabinet to head the Palestinian Authority. Former Prime Minister Salam Fayyad was reinstated to his old post, along with several other members of the Fatah faction. Fayyad denied reports of renewed talks between Palestinian officials and Israeli leaders, despite ongoing Israeli settlement expansion in the West Bank.
I don't think it's really the right time to be talking about negotiation, when in fact there are understandings and agreements that have been reached that require immediate implementation. I don't think Mr. Netanyahu set the right tone by clearly avoiding any reference to the possibility of a solution concept that has become a matter of international consensus, namely the two-state solution.
Meanwhile, in Gaza, Hamas spokesperson Fawzi Bahoum rejected the cabinet as illegitimate amidst ongoing national unity talks brokered by Egypt.
The formation of the government by Mahmoud Abbas in the West Bank will reinforce the political chaos, judicial and legislative, which he is carrying out over there in the West Bank. This is considered to be a deliberate sabotage of the internal Palestinian dialogue and threatens negotiations slated to take place in the future in Cairo.
In Afghanistan, two Americans have been killed in a roadside bombing near Kabul. The Pentagon says the victims were a U.S. soldier and a military contractor. In other news from Afghanistan, the Pentagon says four U.S. contractors with the company formerly known as Blackwater weren't authorized to carry weapons when they fired on an approaching vehicle in Kabul earlier this month. At least one Afghan civilian was killed and another two wounded in the attack. The contractors were off duty at the time and had been reportedly drinking. The contractors now say Blackwater officials had supplied them with the guns in violation of their military contract. In Spain, lawmakers are trying to block their judiciary's war crimes investigations of foreign governments, including the United States. On Tuesday, Spain's Congress voted to limit judges' jurisdiction to cases with a clear Spanish connection. Spain's National Court is currently investigating 13 foreign cases under the principle of universal jurisdiction. They include the torture of U.S. prisoners at Guantanamo and Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip. The Spanish vote follows weeks of pressure by foreign governments seeking to curb the investigations. It's unclear whether the vote will apply to the current cases or only to future ones. Newly disclosed financial statements show two top Obama administration envoys received hundreds of thousands of dollars in consulting and speaking fees last year. Dennis Ross, who serves as special advisor for Iran, received more than $200,000 in speaking fees from pro-Israeli government groups. Ross refused to disclose how much he earned for the appearances on the cable news network Fox News. Meanwhile, Obama's envoy for Pakistan and Afghanistan, Richard Holbrook, reported $1.7 million in income last year. Holbrook's earnings included more than $300,000 as a consultant for Coca-Cola and $10,000 for serving as a director on the board of the bailed-out insurance giant AIG. A U.S. priest who helped expose abuses by the Brazilian military dictatorship during the 1970s has been killed in Guatemala. The Reverend Lawrence Rosabal died on Monday in a robbery attack by masked gunmen. He was 74 years old. In 1977, Rose Bauhan delivered a letter to First Lady Rosalind Carter detailing his abuse at the hands of Brazilian forces, helping to bring international attention on the Brazilian dictatorship. And the Uruguayan writer Mario Benedetti has died at the age of 88. A popular novelist and playwright, Benedetti was also an outspoken political commentator criticizing U.S. intervention in Latin America and the Cuban embargo. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today we spend the hour on one of the most controversial legacies of the Bush administration, the use and legal justification of torture. In the week since President Obama released the torture memos, a former FBI interrogator testified to the inefficacy of the CIA's so-called enhanced interrogation techniques. A former aide to Colin Powell said the interrogations were aimed at building the case for the Iraq War. And a coalition of advocacy groups has just launched a campaign to disbar 12 former Bush administration lawyers. Meanwhile, in Spain, despite the opposition of the Spanish Attorney General, Judge Baltasar Garzon has launched probes into the torture at Guantanamo, as well as six Bush administration lawyers who provided the legal framework for the use of torture. Here in the United States, just how much change or accountability the Obama administration will bring remains to be seen. Last week, President Obama reneged on a promise to release photographs showing the abuse of prisoners at overseas CIA and military jails.
The publication of these photos would not add any additional benefit to our understanding of what was carried out in the past by a small number of individuals. In fact, the most direct consequence of releasing them, I believe, would be to further inflame anti-American opinion and to put our troops in greater danger. Moreover, I fear the publication of these photos may only have a chilling effect on future investigations of detainee abuse.
Later in the week, President Obama invited further criticism for deciding to resurrect military commissions for prisoners at Guantanamo. White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs defended the military tribunal system.
The president, as I said during the debate, said that properly structured military commissions had a role to play. The changes that he is seeking, he believes, will ensure the protections that are necessary for these to be conducted in order to reach that certain justice as well as live up to our values.
Well, I'm joined today in the Firehouse studio by two people who've been closely following the Bush administration's treatment of prisoners held overseas and helped expose many of its facets. Philippe Sands is a British attorney and professor at University College London, the author of the book Torture Team, Rumsfeld's Memo and the Betrayal of American Values. The book uncovered the role of U.S. government lawyers in authorizing torture. It's cited as a key influence by the Spanish lawyer prosecuting the case against the six Bush administration lawyers. I'm also joined by New Yorker staff writer Jane Mayer. She's the author of The Dark Side, the inside story of how the war on terror turned into a war on American ideals, for which she recently won the Ridenour Book Prize and the New York Public Library's Helen Bernstein Book Award for Excellence in Journalism. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! I wanted to start off on the issue of the Spanish Parliament, actually, just in the last hours, yesterday, saying, well, Philippe Sands, maybe you can explain it, because it's been hard to understand where Spain stands on this issue and on their crusading judge, Baltasar Garzón.
Well, so Spain's law has basically allowed its criminal courts to investigate international crimes such as torture and other international abuses for many years. That was the basis, of course, for the case brought against Senator Pinochet a decade or so ago. The decision yesterday is merely a recommendation by the parliament to change the law and to limit its application to situations in which Spaniards are involved or the perpetrators are present on Spanish soil. It's, as I understand it, only prospective. It only looks to the future. And so it has no effect on existing investigations. But more to the point, in any event, the case brought against the Bush Six, the cases that Judges Velasco and Baltasar Garzón are looking at, do indeed involve individuals either of Spanish nationality or Spanish residency. So I don't think this will have any effect for ongoing proceedings.
What about this pressure that's being brought on the Spanish Parliament and on everyone in Spain right now?
I think it may actually not be the case which is being investigated in relation to the Bush 6 and the Guantanamo abuses, but the Israeli investigation, which has been underway for some considerable period of time. And that has caused tremendous pressure to be brought to bear on the Spanish government from the Israeli government. And I'm not sure, to
and
be
that
honest,
investigation is
that investigation concerns abuses in Gaza and other occupied territories. And I'm not sure, what I'm not hearing is that there is any huge pressure from the Obama administration in relation to these issues. There have been high-level conversations and discussions. The criminal investigation is underway. The Spanish judges have sent what are called letters rogatory, asking questions to the U.S. Department of Justice. The Attorney General, Mr. Holder, has said he will treat those seriously and look at them properly.
Well, let's look at the Spanish case here, the six people and who they are and where they come from in the Bush administration.
Well, the Bush six, amazingly and coincidentally, are the same six lawyers I happen to have focused on. And in that sense, I think the book contributed to a catalyzing effect. The lawyers that you've got in no particular order of significance, Alberto Gonzalez, the former Attorney General and White House counsel, David Addington, who was Vice President Cheney's counsel, Jay Bybee, who's been very much in the news recently in relation to the second of his memos, which has come out, John Yoo, who probably wrote large parts of that memo, still teaching at Berkeley Law School, Doug Feith, who was the number three in the Pentagon, and finally, Jim Haynes, who was Mr. Rumsfeld's lawyer as general counsel. I don't think any of those individuals are going to be taking vacations in Tuscany in the foreseeable future.
I wanted to go to Feith. You interviewed Feith, actually, is that right?
I did. And
explain.
Well, I interviewed him in December 2006. I recorded the interview. I've produced a transcript of the interview. I've put it on the website of Vanity Fair magazine, so it's available for all to see. People can form their own view. He, during the course of that interview, confirmed the significance of the decision on the Geneva Conventions that none of the detainees at Guantanamo could have rights under it as a basis for moving forward, if you like, on harsher techniques. And he, amazingly, when I first met him, denied that he'd had any role in the interrogation issues. I pointed out to him when I was with him that his name appeared on the actual memorandum signed by Donald Rumsfeld, authorizing new techniques of interrogation. He changed his tune. But we've seen more recently other documents emerge, the Senate Armed Services Committee emerge, placing him really at the center of the whole operation.
Former Undersecretary of Defense Douglas Feith, one of these six lawyers named in the Spanish complaint, denies, as you said, directing the Bush administration's torture policy. Well, an interview on the O'Reilly Factor on Fox earlier this year, Feith also criticized your work, Philippe Sands.
First of all, what I understand about the allegations about me personally, I happen to know, are just backwards, and I'm being criticized for a position that I never advocated, and so the facts are just wrong. But there's also a broader point of principle here, which is what the Spanish authorities are considering doing is indicting people in the former U.S. government officials for giving advice to the president. And the idea that a foreign official can disagree with advice given to the president, they're not talking about action, and they're not even talking about directing people to take action. They're talking about people who were advising the president. What's going on in Spain is implementing essentially an idea that a British lawyer has been proposing, a guy named Philippe Sands, who wrote an extremely dishonest book on the subject. So I knew that he was going around and some other people were going around trying to find somebody in Europe who could bring indictments.
That's Douglas Feith.
He is, and he's every author's best publicist, because being on the Briley show in that way, of course, is wonderful for an unknown British lawyer. I have, as you know, recently published the paperback edition of the book. I've not changed a single word in relation to what I wrote about Mr. Feith. I stand by every word. He has obvious concerns. He needs to set the record straight in his view to avoid investigations that are underway. He's also subject to a disbarment application, I think, that's been initiated this week. I think he faces very considerable difficulty, and I'm perfectly content to debate him any time or any place, and I'm perfectly happy for him to make those allegations. They're really without any foundation at all.
And Jane Mayer, the other members of the Bush Six, this grouping that have been that the Spanish judge Baltasar Garzón is going after, where are they? What's happening with them?
Well, various things. David Addington has actually not been heard from for quite some time. So,
and his position was?
His position was the lawyer to Vice President Cheney and then the chief of staff to Vice President Cheney. And he was a very forceful character who really helped shape the kind of what they called the new paradigm, this whole legal understanding that put certain terror suspects outside the rule of law. He was very important in shaping that. You know, some of the others, as mentioned, John Yoo is teaching at Bolt Hall in Berkeley. He's got a full course schedule for the fall, so I think he's coming back. And I think Alberto Gonzalez is still looking for a job, from what I've heard. I mean, they are a cloud hangs over this group. And it obviously doesn't help their reputations to have been named in this case in Spain. They are in the midst of a sort of a growing political furor over their role. And I think that it'll be clarified somewhat, that is their role, when the Justice Department has a study that's coming out very soon. It's an investigation into whether the lawyers could be faulted for justifying America's embrace of torture. They basically made it possible by coming up with decisions that said that these kinds of techniques could be legal. And the Justice Department has been spending 5 years looking at their role and is due to release a report possibly at the end of this month.
We're going to go to break and then come back. I know Vice President Dick Cheney, though he hadn't been seen a great deal in the 8 years he was in office, is now being seen a great deal and saying, raising this very issue. I mean, what if you had Eisenhower, I think he said, going after Truman and charging him with war crimes for dropping the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We're talking to Jane Mayer. Her book, The Dark Side, The Inside Story of How the War on Terror Turned into a War on American Ideals, has just come out in paperback, as has Philippe Sands, Torture Team, Rumsfeld's Memo, and the Betrayal of American Values. We'll be back with them in a minute.
Is on fire. There's no need to plead. Your mother or your brother or the one that comes before you. Oh, I'm waiting on a time when the people walk free to see. When the penitentiary in our mind. There's no need to plead for your father or your son or the one that you become.
And you've been listening to Penitentiary. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Our guest for the hour, Jane Mayer. The Dark Side is her book, The Inside Story of How the War on Terror Turned into a War on American Ideals. She writes for The New Yorker magazine. And Philippe Sands is a British barrister, a British attorney. His book is called Torture Team, Rumsfeld's Memo and the Betrayal of American Values. A lot of stories in the news around this right now. But my question to you, Philippe Sands, is you're talking about, and Jane, you're talking about these six people being afraid to travel abroad, probably. But what about here at home? Why can they travel freely here?
Well, I think that there's a big issue here. I mean, I've always thought that foreign investigations are not an end in themselves. They're a means to an end. And it really must be for the United States to sort this out. I've testified on several occasions before House Judiciary and Senate Judiciary, and I've said on every occasion my deepest wish is for the United States to sort this out. That is only, I think, at an early stage of beginning to happen. President Obama seems very torn. Does he want to be a rule of law guy? Does he want to be a move on, realpolitik sort of guy? And he cuts and turns in different directions. I think he may be playing the long game. I think it is inevitable. There will have to be some sort of investigation in the United States. The big question becomes, what sort of investigation? Jane has mentioned the Office of Professional Responsibility at the Department of Justice, which will produce, I think, a report very shortly, which will be very significant.
And who's leading this report, Jane?
Who is leading?
Yeah, who's doing this investigation?
Well,
who's heading it up?
It was done by non-political experts who are basically the watchdogs of the lawyers inside the Justice Department. And it will be released by Eric Holder, the Attorney General.
And the issue of the Bush Six, they're from a certain sector of the Bush administration. There's no one in the military. There's no one in the CIA. Why not? And also, it doesn't go up the chain of command.
I think that that's a very important question. I focused on the lawyers because I am a lawyer, and I really, as I think I've said to you before when I've talked with you, couldn't understand how lawyers who'd been to the finest law schools in the United States could approve torture, which is what they did. And so I focused on them for that reason, but I focused on them also for another tactical reason. I never imagined that so soon there would be so much scrutiny in the United States. It didn't really occur to me that it would be possible to really put these issues under the spotlight. And if it did happen, I didn't think it could happen in relation to a former vice president or a former secretary of defense or a former president. So I focused on the next tier down. But the key point is they were enablers. But for the lawyers, none of this would have happened. But at the end of the day, the key people are those who actually signed off on the decisions, right at the very highest echelons of government. And we now know that's not just the vice president, it's not just the president, it's not just the Rumsfeld. There's new material that has come out to indicate that Condoleezza Rice may have had a role in all of this. She has said, of course, she didn't take the decision, she merely communicated the decision. I'm not sure that there's much of a distinction to be drawn there, but it goes very high.
What is the evidence there?
Well, the evidence is one of the new documents that has emerged, which has had very little play here. It's a chronology that is produced by the intelligence committee of the Senate in January of this year, detailing the circumstances in which the two torture memos written by John Yoo, signed by Jay Bybee, were produced on the 1st of August 2002. And that document was put out recently by Eric Holder, the Attorney General, who I think is very committed to getting to the root of what went wrong and what happened. And that document identifies two meetings that were held in July 2002 and identifies by office but not by name the individuals who basically, it says, approved waterboarding at those meetings. And it included in the list of names Condoleezza Rice. That is pretty powerful evidence.
Jane Mayer, want to add to that?
Well, no, I mean, we've seen that she's been struggling recently to answer questions in Stanford University, and then a fourth grader put some questions to her at one point, and she's having a very hard time explaining herself. This is, you know, I mean, anyway, I think that, to me, what's interesting is this is not going away. There seems to be a hope within the Obama administration that they could somehow move on, put this behind them, and what we're seeing is it's not really containable politically. They're going to have to deal with it somehow.
I wanted to go to former Vice President Dick Cheney, who has been on the airwaves quite a bit in the past few weeks right now. This is a clip of Vice President Cheney. He has been defending the Bush administration's torture of prisoners held overseas. He was appearing on CBS's Face the Nation last week, fiercely defending the techniques he authorized, but denied they amounted to torture. He also called for the CIA to release full records of prisoner interrogations to prove Bush administration torture tactics yielded valuable intelligence. He was questioned by CBS's Bob Schieffer.
Other people in the administration say, as a matter of fact, what we found out using these methods, and I mean, let's call things what they are, waterboarding was one of the techniques that were used, that they really didn't get all that much from that. You say they did.
I say they did. Four former directors of the Central Intelligence Agency say they did, bipartisan basis. Release the memos. And we can look and see for yourself what was produced.
Well, Mr. Vice President, let me ask you this. I mean, I'm not asking you to violate any rules of classification, but is there anything you can tell us specifically that those memos would tell us? I mean, some information we gleaned, some fact that we got that we wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
What it shows is that overwhelmingly, the process we had in place produced from certain key individuals, such as Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Abu Zubaydah, two of the three who were waterboarded. And Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's the man who killed 3,000 Americans on 9/11, blew up the World Trade Center, attacked the Pentagon, tried to blow up the White House or the Capitol building. An evil, evil man that's been in our custody since March of 03. He did not cooperate fully in terms of interrogations until after waterboarding. Once we went through that process, he produced vast quantities of invaluable information about Al-Qaeda.
What do you say to those, Mr. Vice President, who say that when we employ these kind of tactics, which are, after all, the tactics that the other side uses, that when we adopt their methods, that we're weakening security, not enhancing security, because it sort of makes a mockery of what we tell the rest of the world?
Well, then you'd have to say that in effect, we're prepared to sacrifice American lives rather than run an intelligent interrogation program that would provide us the information we need to protect America. The fact of the matter is, these techniques that we're talking about are used on our own people. We've in a SEER program that in effect trains our people with respect to capture and evasion and so forth and escape. A lot of them go through these same exact procedures.
Do you now, is what you're saying here is that we should do anything if we could get information?
No, but remember what happened here, Bob. We had captured these people. We had pursued interrogation more normal way. We decided that we needed some enhanced techniques. So we went to the Justice Department, and the controversy has arisen over the opinions written by the Justice Department. The reason we went to the Justice Department wasn't because we felt we were going to take some kind of free hand assault on these people or that we were in the torture business. We weren't. And specifically what we got from the Office of Legal Counsel were legal memos that laid out what's appropriate and what's not appropriate in light of our international commitments. If we had been about torture, we wouldn't have wasted our time going to the Justice Department.
That's former Vice President Dick Cheney speaking to Bob Schieffer and CBS's Face the Nation, Philippe Sands.
The man, let's face it, let's call a spade, is a torturer, and he should face what torturers should face, namely a full criminal investigation. Waterboarding is torture. There are no ifs and buts. I see that clip and I see him rewriting history. What I show conclusively in the book, what we now know, is that the legal memos followed the fixation of a policy. In other words, the law followed the policy. The policy was to move to abuse. They found the small group of lawyers who could be relied upon to sign off on the dotted line. And that is what happened. That is now clearly established, and that is why the lawyers are in the dock. And I find it astonishing and deeply sad that a former vice president of this country can still take to the airwaves and make those sorts of arguments, arguments that plays into the hands of foreign nations. I mean, if they've got memos saying these things can be done by the United States against others, then why can't others use the same memos to do the same thing against U.S. citizens? It's absolutely shocking, and it is astonishing that the airwaves continue to give him the type of space to make these types of statements.
It's also, I mean, one thing that's interesting to me is it's a false premise if you actually know the details of these cases. And no matter how much data has come out, it seems that Vice President Cheney is impervious to the facts, which are, as we heard when there were hearings in Congress the week before last, Ali Soufan, the FBI agent who was at the side of Abu Zubaydah and trying to interrogate him, said they were getting good information out of him simply by talking to him, simply by being knowledgeable about the culture that they were questioning him about. And that
Let's
worked.
Let's go to a clip of Ali Soufan. Okay. Last week's Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on the interrogation of foreign prisoners. This is the former FBI agent Ali Soufan testifying. He's behind a wooden screen. He's calling the Bush administration's so-called enhanced interrogation techniques slow, ineffective, unreliable, and harmful.
From my experience, I strongly believe that it is a mistake to use what has become known as enhanced interrogation techniques, a position shared by professional operatives, including CIA officers who were present at the initial phases of the Abu Zubaydah interrogation. These techniques, from an operational perspective, are slow, ineffective, unreliable, and harmful to our efforts to defeat Al-Qaeda. A major problem is it is ineffective. Al-Qaeda are trained to resist torture. As we see from the recently released DOJ memos on interrogation, the contractors had to keep requesting authorization to use harsher and harsher methods. In the case of Abu Zubaydah, that continued for several months, right till waterboarding was introduced. And waterboarding itself had to be used 83 times, an indication that Abu Zubaydah had already called his interrogators bluff. In contrast, when we interrogated him using intelligent interrogation methods, within the first hour, we gained important actionable intelligence. This amateurish technique is harmful to our long-term strategy and interests. It plays into the enemy's handbook.
Ali Soufan, the former FBI agent testifying behind a wooden screen in Congress, Jane Mayer.
So what you have here is an eyewitness who's contradicting the Vice President of the United States. The Vice President was not there. The eyewitness who was said, we didn't need to use these torture techniques. And what's interesting is it wasn't just the FBI agent, Ali Soufan. There is a report that in the New York Times that the CIA officers who were there also opposed ramping up these techniques, and they wanted to stop. They wanted to stop using techniques that they thought were inhumane on Abu Zubaydah, and they were ordered to keep going by the political people back in Washington. So you've got people who are not at the scene who are making these decisions and countermanding the people who were at the scene, who really know something about what was going on.
And explain the sequence from the FBI interrogating Zubaydah to the CIA doing it, why that happened.
Well, the FBI, Ali Soufan is one of the most knowledgeable counterterrorism officers in America. He's fluent in Arabic, and he's been trying to fight al-Qaeda for years. And he was brought in to try to get some information out of Abu Zubaydah in legal ways. But the CIA was ordered to take Zubaydah and do things to him that Ali Soufan at the scene said he thought were criminal. We now know that he also, and I described this in the book, he sent up word through the chain of command to the top of the FBI saying, I think that the CIA officers should be arrested at the scene because of what they were doing.
Who was the CIA officer?
Well, we haven't got the names here, but we know who was at the top of the agency, and it wouldn't have happened without the blessing of George Tenet, who was at the time the director. And so, at any rate, those techniques moved forward. And as we now know, as Ali Soufan says, they had to do this 83 times to Abu Zubaydah before they were satisfied.
The role of medical professionals. I was just on this mini-city tour, and I was in Spokane. We weren't far from the American Legion building, where Mitchell Jessen is located, about 120-person firm. Explain Mitchell Jessen, where it fits into the story, right to the latest torture memos that actually President Obama had posted online.
Well, and also what we just heard Vice President Cheney say, oh, well, we didn't do anything to these people that we don't do to our own people in training. And he mentioned the SEER program, which is the training program where they take U.S. Soldiers who might possibly be taken captive by an immoral, unethical enemy that doesn't abide by any law, and they subject them to a little taste of what torture might be like. That program, the SEER program, has psychologists who work in it and oversee the training in order to make sure that the soldiers don't freak out completely.
Survival,
and
evasion,
make them survival, evasion, resistance, and escape is what the program is called, SEER. And two of those military psychologists, James Mitchell and Bruce Jessen, got involved very early on in designing what became the United States interrogation program. And what they did was they reverse engineered, they took tactics that were designed by the Chinese communists, by the Stalinist show trials, by various tyrannical states to get false confessions out of people. They took those techniques and, amazingly, they became the template for what the United States started doing to people who were in our custody. So,
I wanted to go now to the issue of Nancy Pelosi. Some unusual things have happened as a result of, the Republicans saying that she knew that she was briefed. In fact, I think Newt Gingrich has just written a letter saying she should step down as the Speaker of the House. He was once a Speaker of the House and was forced to step down. But it's going to an interesting issue, which is the Republicans, of course, against a commission, an investigation. Now they're calling for it. The question is whether it will backfire. But let's go to this question of who knew about the use of torture and when they knew it, a central question now. Republicans pointing to the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's involvement in the torture briefings, and not just the Republicans saying this. After the CIA released documents last week showing Pelosi was briefed on waterboarding back in September 2002, she insisted she was told waterboarding wasn't being used then and said secrecy rules forced her to remain silent when she learned more later.
The CIA briefed me only once on enhanced interrogation techniques in September 2002 in my capacity as ranking member of the Intelligence Committee. I was informed then that the Department of Justice opinions had concluded that the use of enhanced interrogation techniques were legal. The only mention of waterboarding at that briefing was that it was not being employed.
Nancy Pelosi, Jane Mayer.
Well, I, you know, it's interesting that it may result in pushing ahead the investigations. The Republicans may have sort of stepped in it in a way. She's been calling for an independent investigation as well. So whatever implication there is of her in this process, it hasn't stopped her from calling for an investigation.
And your sense of what she knew and when she knew it?
You know, I don't think any of us really knows exactly. But I do think it is completely possible that there were honest misunderstandings that took place in those briefings, because what the CIA said to many people, and I don't know specifically what they said to Pelosi, but what they said again was, we are only doing to these detainees what we do to our own people in training. So it made it sound like it was relatively innocent to many people who did not understand the second part of this, which was what we do to our own people in training is we torture them. And so it is, I think many people who got these briefings had the failure of imagination to understand what was going on, or else they didn't really follow up and want to know. And
we're
I don't know what
Bob
happened
Graham,
with her.
Florida, the
I've
Senator
spoken to
Jay
Bob
Rockefeller.
Graham. Bob Graham absolutely denies that he was told that Abu Zubaydah was going to be waterboarded. And he also says that the CIA's dates are wrong in describing when he was in these briefings. And he keeps, you know, quite famously, a diary of everything he ever does. So went back and checked. It's sort of an interesting statement from the current CIA director about these briefings, where he basically said, you know, this was 7 years ago and we're relying on people's memories, and memories may be fallible, basically. There's kind of a little wiggle room on all sides in this.
Are you surprised that the current CIA director is coming down so forcefully on this issue and defending the CIA? It's not as if he comes out of the CIA establishment.
You know, I think he has felt that it's important to win the loyalty of the people inside the building. That's what people tell me. And he's met a lot of them by now. And I guess that's, you know, he seems to be taking that role.
We're going to break, and we're going to come back. We're talking about Leon Panetta, who is also fellow California.
That is true. Very uncomfortably, and I think
Pelosi.
An old friend of Nancy Pelosi's.
Well, Jane Mayer and Philippe Sands are our guest for the hour. We're talking about the issue of torture. We're also going to talk about the military commissions, whether they will go on, and the Congress saying no to funding the closing of Guantanamo, and what this means overall for President Obama's agenda and his reversal on the issue of pictures. Philippe Sands' book is called Torture Team, Rumsfeld's Memo and the Betrayal of American Values. Jane Mayer's is The Dark Side. They're both now out in paperback. They've done groundbreaking work on torture and exposing it in this country and around the world. Stay with us.
They say everything can be replaced. They say every distance is not near. So I remember every face of every man who put me here. nation. They say every man must fall.
Nina Simone, I Shall Be Released. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. By the way, if you'd like a copy of today's show, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. We're spending the hour with two people who have been exposing the issue of torture in this country for years now, writing breaking pieces, both writing books. Jane Mayer's book is called The Dark Side. She was a National Book Award finalist. She just won the Bernstein Award for Excellence in Journalism. Philippe Sands is a British barrister, a British lawyer, who wrote The Torture Team, Rumsfeld's Memo, and the Betrayal of American Values. The issue of the pictures. Jane, I want to ask you about this. You had President Obama clearly talking about the importance of transparency and photographs. And now they've gone back. Oh, President Obama has done just a complete reversal on this and said, no, they're not going to release them. I couldn't help but notice it was after Vice President Cheney's going on, I don't know about every network, but on a number of networks and speaking out, that his campaign may actually be quite successful.
I just don't know if it was really Cheney that pushed them back. It seems to me that what pushed them back was kind of the military establishment. It was General Odierno in particular, who was the commander in Iraq at the time that these pictures and this abuse took place. So, I mean, there was kind of a self-interested aspect to the advice not to release these pictures from General Odierno, which I don't think people have examined that much.
Explain.
But, well, I mean, these pictures were of abuse that took place on his watch. And if you go up the chain of command, inevitably you would get to the general who's saying, don't release the pictures. So I think it seems that Obama is trying to sort of split the baby in half and keep some kind of keep the military establishment on his side, the intelligence establishment on his side. He's arguing that these would inflame anti-Americanism and might endanger soldiers out in the field.
And General McChrystal, but now replacing McKiernan in Afghanistan, known for being in charge of, in Iraq at a time when the prisoners were being abused there at Abu Ghraib.
Yeah, I mean, he has it depends who you talk to. A mixed reputation. Some people think he's fantastic. I think what happened was he changed his view on some of these things. And so after Abu Ghraib, everybody sort of pulled back from using really abusive tactics in Iraq as they had used before the pictures of Abu Ghraib came out. And McChrystal, though, was overseeing special forces, and a lot of very bad things happened in the hands of the special forces in Iraq in around 2003 during the insurgency. People were just rounded up and subjected to awful abuse. And it's been described, I describe it in my book, it upset some very good officers who tried to stop it. And so, you know, there's a lot to hide. And I think the problem for Obama here is by not opening up the worst stuff from the Bush years, he may be in danger of becoming part of a cover-up. And I don't think he really wants to be in that position politically. At the same time, I understand, I've talked to people in the White House, they do not want to be distracted by this forever. They've got a very positive agenda that they want to push forward. They see this as Bush's problems. They don't want to be tied up in it forever.
Or they're tying themselves in it forever.
They've inherited this mess. So I have a certain amount of sympathy for them in that they want this to go away.
Philippe Sands, do you have the same sympathy?
It's not going to go away. I mean, history tells you in Chile, in Argentina, in other parts of the world, these cases do not go away. That's what history teaches you. You can't bury your head in the sand and hope that you will draw a line and no one will talk about it anymore. It will go on and on. And my fear with these photographs is that they are taking steps which will inevitably delay the day of reckoning. It's the same thing in relation to investigations. What's significant about these photographs, and I think this has not been fully appreciate.
And we're talking about, they're talking about something like 40 of them, but we're talking actually thousands.
No, there are thousands.
There are thousands.
There are thousands of photographs. They're talking about releasing 44. And the significance of them is that they are not limited to Iraq. They include Afghanistan and Bagram, and they include Guantanamo. And the release of the photographs is significant because it will give full force to the lie that the abuses at Abu Ghraib were a few bad eggs. What will become impossible to withstand is the recognition that the abuse was the result of policy decisions and legal advices and was widespread. We know some of the images that have been the subject of this litigation. It's not right for President Obama to say these are not particularly inflammatory images. We know some of the stuff that is going to be coming.
And they are.
And it includes photographs, I am told, of people's heads being partly shaved so that a cross is placed on the head of a Muslim man. That is one image that I understand is out there. They're going to come out at some point. They ought to be gotten out sooner rather than later. And at that point, people can then begin the process of moving on. And coming back, I think, to the earlier point, it's the same in relation to the issue of investigations. It's not a party political issue. I completely subscribe to the view that Jane has just explained in relation to what Nancy Pelosi has said. But we shouldn't be partisan about this. If there was knowledge, it doesn't matter whether it was independents or Republicans or Democrats. We need a full investigation. It needs to come out.
I want to go to the role of a judge now, Judge. He was then just Jay Bybee, who signed off on two of the torture memos released last month by President Obama. He signed the memos when he was Assistant Attorney General at the Office of Legal Counsel. 6 months later, he breezed through his confirmation hearing for his appointment to the Federal Appeals Court, and Congress voted him to a lifetime on the bench. This is excerpts of a piece by David Murdoch for the American News Project that looks into this very question using interviews with attorney Scott Horton and Yale University law professor Bruce Ackerman.
Without his authorization, the members of the CIA may well not have done it at all. Or if they had, they would be plainly subject to criminal responsibility today. So these memos are at the absolute center of the torture activities of the United States government. This is not a minor matter. This is the foundation of our activities. Without these memos, the entire exercise of torture probably would not have taken place.
Well, if we go back and check this against the timeline, we see these memoranda, you know, issued at the beginning of August, prepared, you know, perhaps a few weeks before that. This stacks up with the time when Jay Bybee is in transit from the OLC to his judicial position. Congress is reviewing his candidacy, and he's going through the committee process with the Senate Judiciary Committee. No one is aware, as far as I can see, certainly no one on the Senate Judiciary staff, nor members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, are aware of this entire controversy or aware of these memos.
So there was no critical questioning at all at the hearing room, and that does not normally happen.
Mr. Bybee, I've seen a lot of people around here and a lot of judges, and I don't know of anybody who has any more qualifications or any greater ability in the law than you have. And that's counting some pretty exceptional people. And I think that's one reason why this particular hearing has not been as much an ordeal as some of the ones others have had.
Had the Senate known about these memos, there's simply no way Bybee ever would have been confirmed as a federal judge to begin with.
But I'm hopeful that in your case and the case of many, many others, that we can get you through, get you on the bench, and get you doing your life's work, which is really what that will be, in the best interest of our country. And I have absolutely no doubt that your efforts will be in the best interest of our country.
Had all of this been out on the record, it's very clear he wouldn't have been confirmed. So that means he secured his confirmation to the bench through stealth.
Judge Bybee is going to exercise an important position of power in the United States government for the next 25 years. The question is, shall we remove him from the future exercise of power? And to have someone who is violated the war crime statute, let's say he did. If he did, then to interpret the laws of the United States and to tell other people that they should go to jail. Well, this is quite something.
there may be very good reasons why a prosecutor in the end of the day would decide not to indict Jay Bybee and take him to trial. I can imagine, you know, I can easily understand these considerations. But that someone like this would be sitting as a federal judge at the highest level court below the Supreme Court, that's outrageous. I think also there's an obvious solution to this dilemma, and that solution would be for Jay Bybee to resign.
That's Attorney Scott Horton. Before that, Yale University Law Professor Bruce Ackerman congratulating Jay Bybee in the Senate hearing was Orrin Hatch, the senator from Utah. Philippe Sands.
I think it's a story that is picked up outside the United States, that a man who authorized torture, who signed two memos, is sitting on one of the highest courts of the United States, sends a shocking signal around the world. I think it's an affront to the idea that the United States is committed to the rule of law. The United States is going around the world telling people to clean up their judicial appointment systems, attacking, often very justifiably, the composition of international tribunals for not having the right sort of people as judges. And yet on the Ninth Circuit, we have a man who signed off on waterboarding and said it was fine and could be used. I think the sooner there is a proper inquiry as to the circumstances in which he obtained his position. And of course, it's important to remember that at the date he went through his hearings, the memos had not yet appeared. So the members of the Judiciary Committee were not aware of what he had done, and he did not offer it up. And that, of course, raises certain questions as to whether or not he misled the Judiciary Committee.
Another headline is military tribunals, Jane Mayer, and President Obama's reversal on the military tribunals. What will happen now?
Well, I they haven't given us all the details yet of what these tribunals will involve. I mean, and so, what President Obama has basically said is that he would restore the rule of law and due process for all the detainees in the war on terror. And we will see whether or not military tribunals can live up to that.
And this latest headline, which is the Congress saying "not in my backyard" for
the ultimate
will
not in
fund
my backyard
Guantanamo closing.
They did, nobody wants to have any of the Guantanamo prisoners anywhere in their state in this entire country, it seems. And the Democrats have really just fled from Obama on this. And
led the charge against Obama, Harry Reid, for example.
Really, I mean, they've criticized the Bush administration for keeping Guantanamo open, and now they are running away from trying to close it. So it's not exactly a profile in courage. I think, you know, to some extent, you can understand that these prisoners have been so dehumanized in the way they've been described. I mean, we had one top military official from the Bush administration describe them as being able to chew through hydraulic cables to bring down planes. And, you know, they've been described as absolute monsters. And the truth is, though, that the United States prison system has many monsters in it. It has, the worst, some very scary convicted terrorists, including the shoe bomber, Richard Reid. It's got the people that tried to blow up the World Trade Center the first time. And I don't know
the Unabomber.
It's Timothy McVeigh. I mean, there are many people in maximum security prisons in the United States who are being safely housed in those maximum security prisons.
There's a couple of related points.
Very quickly,
military tribunals is a mistake to turn this into a war. I think sends the wrong message. But there's a way finally to tie together all of these threads. The Obama administration is desperately trying to get rid of these people from Guantanamo and trying to do deals with third countries, including European countries, to take these individuals. Some of these countries, I think, are going to turn around to the Obama administration and say, look, we may be willing to do this, but you've got to get your own house in order. You've got to get to the bottom of what happened. You can't expect us to do the cleanup for you if you are not going to put the spotlight on the wrongdoing that happened in the past. And I think connections will increasingly be made on those issues.
Philippe Sands and Jane Mayer, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Philippe Sands is author of Torture Team, Jane Mayer, The Dark Side. Both books are now out in paperback. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shrufa Dokkaduz, Aramata, Angela Kamat, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Masood, Rabbi Karen. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. This